Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. A cashless society is one where no one can make a transaction of any kind without the explicit permission and surveillance of a third party that's not even a part of the transaction. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. We are closing out The Case for Electronic Cash by Jerry Brito today, and this will be part three. So if you have not hit part one and two yet, please do so. Go back. They are the two previous episodes. And but I am not going to waste any more time today. I don't have much of an update. So we're just going to jump right in. We are starting back in this piece at the last section before the conclusion. And it is titled, The Moral Case for Electronic Cash. Cash is a bearer, peer-to-peer, permissionless, and privacy-preserving form of money. In a world without cash, all transactions are intermediated. That means that there is no way to engage in a transaction that is not recorded by a third party, and there is no way to engage in a transaction without the permission of a third party. Such complete intermediation is at odds with the essential values of an open society. Indeed, intermediation undergirds the systems of control employed by authoritarian states like China. Cash is essential to an open society. It is an escape valve that lets us protect our privacy, dignity, and autonomy. It is therefore imperative that we preserve our ability to use it. Yet that is not enough. As we move to an increasingly online world in which physical cash is not practical for many transactions, we must also develop and foster electronic cash. Electronic cash is exactly what it sounds like, a bearer, peer-to-peer, permissionless, and privacy-preserving form of money that is not paper or metal, but digital. Bitcoin, the world's first cryptocurrency, was created to be that. While it is bearer, peer-to-peer, and permissionless, it is not yet completely privacy-preserving. The Bitcoin system still leaves a sufficient digital trail to make it traceable in a way that physical cash is not. For close to a decade, cryptographers and computer scientists have been working to improve on Bitcoin's design in order to build a cryptocurrency that is not only permissionless and censorship-resistant, as Bitcoin is, but also private. Today, there are several privacy-preserving cryptocurrencies under development, including Beam, Dash, Grin, Mobilecoin, Monero, and Zcash, which hold the promise of being true electronic cash. It is also likely that enhanced privacy will eventually be added to Bitcoin as well. Privacy is a notoriously difficult concept to define, but a useful definition was put forth by mathematician and computer scientist Eric Hughes. Quote, "Privacy is not secrecy. A private matter is something one doesn't want the whole world to know, but a secret matter is something one doesn't want anybody to know. Privacy is the power to selectively reveal oneself to the world." End quote. In this formulation, it is interesting to note that Hughes does not frame privacy as a right to be respected by others, but as a power to be exercised by individuals. Without denying conceptions of privacy as a right, which necessarily imposes duties on others and must be enforced by government, the case we make here is simply for the freedom to guard what one reveals about oneself to the world, and to build and use technology, like cash, to do so. Not only is that a more modest goal, but additionally, if privacy is to be a check on government overreach, then its enforcement cannot depend on government. The conception of privacy we advance here is therefore something that can be exercised individually and does not depend on anyone else. Think of the $100 bill dropped anonymously into a church's poor box. The donor's privacy depends on no one but himself. The donor's ability to retain his privacy, however, turns on the technology available to him. Physical cash, from seashells to gold coins to paper notes, is a technology that for millennia has allowed individuals to exercise autonomy and retain privacy. As we move to a world that is increasingly dematerialized, with all the attendant benefits and efficiencies, we must preserve the ability to transact anonymously and privately that physical cash has heretofore made possible. Cryptocurrency that is both permissionless and private is a technology that can allow individuals to continue to live in an open society, even as life is increasingly digitized. It is a tool that can allow one to shop at physical or online stores alike and reduce the risk of being tracked. It is a tool that allows one to contribute to advocacy groups that have powerful political enemies. And it is a tool that dissidents can use to resist authoritarian states. Caring deeply about the freedom that cash engenders is part and parcel of the Western liberal tradition. While many Nordic and Asian countries seem to be racing towards adopting a cashless society, in Germany the trend is decidedly the opposite. Given their experience with two authoritarian regimes, one fascist and one communist, Germans seem to appreciate how cash helps protect their freedom, privacy, and autonomy. Germans use cash for 80% of all transactions, and proposals to move in a more cashless direction have been met with widespread public protest. Germans also carry about twice as much cash as people in the U.S., and tens of thousands of restaurants and shops, from big to small, are cash only. In Germany, the major chains, Aldi and IKEA, did not begin accepting credit cards until 2 years ago. Quote, "Cash, to me, is an important public good by which you measure the transparency and legal order of a society, and also the respect for the individual and the private sphere," end quote. Max Ott, a German economist who leads Save Our Cash, a national campaign opposing restrictions on cash, has explained. "Why do Germans like cash is the wrong question," he told Bloomberg. Instead, Ott asks, "Why have others shifted to a cashless society so quickly?" Indeed, quote, "cash is printed freedom" is a German expression. Unlike other polities that have taken for granted the freedom that cash confers on individuals, Germans understand that cash is an individual check on the kind of all-out state control that we see in China. Peer-to-peer electronic cash is at most 10 years old. Before that, all online transactions were necessarily intermediated. This means that there was a period of decades in which digital transactions were synonymous with intermediated transactions, because there simply was no alternative. As a result, it may be that individuals, firms, and governments have come to see electronic transactions as inherently traceable and censorable. But there's nothing natural or fixed about such a state of the world. There is no reason it has to be that way. Indeed, it may have been only a matter of time for individuals who value the capabilities that physical cash technology afford would successfully replicate it digitally. Those who build technology and advocate for its use today share with the German people an understanding of the fragility of liberty and how technologies of individual empowerment are essential to retaining an open society. An open society is not costless. Free speech is abused by demagogues and used to spread truly harmful ideas. Freedom of religion protects cultists. Freedom of movement is exploited by terrorists. Yet it would be ridiculous to do away with these freedoms and the benefit they bestow in order to eliminate their costs. The same is true about technologies that enable an open society. Cars are often used to rob banks, email to commit fraud, web forums to post child pornography. We do not and should not restrict individuals' right to use technologies solely because they could be misused. Without a doubt, electronic cash will be used by some in the course of breaking the law. That is an attendant cost to the benefits described above. If there was no electronic cash, or physical cash for that matter, and all transactions were surveilled and subject to control, then law enforcement might have an easier time prosecuting criminals, just as they would have an easier time spotting crime if all houses were made of glass. But that would not be a better world. It would therefore make no sense to seek to restrict the freedom of all citizens to use cash to undermine the underpinnings of an open society in order to make it easier to catch a minority of people who commit crimes. Justice Douglas was right when he wrote, quote, "I am not yet ready to agree that America is so possessed with evil that we must level all constitutional barriers to give our civil authorities the tools to catch criminals," end quote. The fact that criminals will exploit freedom and technology to break the law is the cost of living in an open society, but it is outweighed by the benefits. And making a thing illegal will not necessarily stop criminals from using it. The good news is that over time we've developed an effective way to deal with the criminal use of cash. Financial institutions throughout the world are required to identify their customers, keep records, and report suspicious activities to government authorities. Among such suspicious activities are the withdrawal or deposit of large sums of cash, or otherwise questionable transactions involving cash. There's no reason why the same reasonable regulatory regime applied to anonymous and untraceable physical cash could not be applied to electronic cash. And in almost all respects, it is already. Doing so would allow law-abiding individuals to withdraw and use electronic cash as a useful form of payment and escape valve from constant monitoring while ensuring that law enforcement has the ability to target the large-scale and systematic criminal use of the technology. What this means in practice is that enforcing the law against some criminals, especially small-scale ones, will not be easy and will instead require the same kind of resource-intensive police work, often undercover, necessary to apprehend those who use physical cash. Those parts of a criminal enterprise that employ electronic cash on a larger scale will eventually interface with the regulated financial system, however, and at that point, law enforcement should have the same tools at their disposal as they do with physical cash. Regulators can and should treat electronic cash the same as physical cash. Conclusion. The U.S. is far from being a cashless society, and it has constitutional protections that should serve as a bulwark against overreach from an authoritarian state. But eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. While the likelihood that a China-style social credit system will be enacted in the U.S. is low, there are similar threats that citizens should be able to guard against. As we have seen, the more intermediated our financial lives become, the more tempted corporate entities and government officials will be to spy on individuals or take steps to restrict how individuals can transact, often with the best of intentions. In 2014, for example, the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, sought bids from vendors to build a passenger screening system that would rely on, quote, commercial data, including, quote, wide-ranging data such as purchase information. The TSA did not explain what kinds of purchases could be deemed red flags, or as Chinese authorities might put it, quote, unhealthy. More recently, online financial intermediaries like PayPal, Stripe, and Patreon have shut down the accounts of users on both of the political spectrum for the fringe views they espoused. And in 2014, J.P. Morgan lost to hackers the private financial records of over 100 million customers. Cash, and in an increasingly digital world, electronic cash, is a tool that law-abiding private individuals can use to protect their privacy, autonomy, and ultimately their dignity. It should not just be tolerated, but fostered and celebrated. Not only do its benefits outweigh its costs, it is a check that individuals may wield over abusive intermediaries. It will help ensure we do not lose our open society. All right, before we jump into some discussion about this awesome piece, let's hit our sponsor real quick and we will come right back. And there we have it, the conclusion of Jerry Brito's amazing report, thanks to Coin Center, titled The Case for Electronic Cash: Why Private Peer-to-Peer Payments Are Essential to an Open Society. And I think this one, I was really happy to get to this one because I just think it's a really important topic. Privacy is always a huge concern, and I think privacy is part of, I think not only in this context, I think there's a lot of other contexts and a lot of other reasons why privacy is important aside from what was laid out in this piece. But I thought this was a really good kind of an overall policy level introduction and touch on some of the cases and consequences around exactly that type of risk of having every transaction intermediated. And I find it hilarious that Germany stands in the position and the culture of cash that it has now, specifically because of their history and because they know, like, the it is far closer in their generational history as to what the consequences of letting those freedoms slip away are. And the people here in the United States and other first world countries that have not had that problem for centuries, or at least not to the degree that Germany has, seem incredibly naive about the consequences of just casually giving up fundamental freedoms and regularly support this kind of stuff without having the slightest clue what they are actually enabling. That particularly on the eve of, or I guess the morning after, Julian Assange has been arrested for publishing crimes against powerful governments, because they were classified crimes. Oh wow, what amazing! Like, imagine if I could murder someone and then just classify the information. How convenient is that? It's just one of those things that, like, you don't realize how far-reaching the consequences are, and you allow people so often allow their impressions of, like, oh well, the government is just there to help, and forget that the government is just people. Like, do you believe that people are always just here to help? Do you believe that people will act in their own self-interest when it is put at odds with the public's or just a normal citizen's self-interest? Like, how many innocent people are screwed simply because somebody in a political position can see into their entire lives, whereas people in the political and government officials and corporate world get their secrecy. They don't have this problem. This is a question of whether citizens get the same power as those in the political and wealthy classes. And that's what's one thing that they forget. This is about equality, not about the fact that, oh, we're going to eliminate cash because no one should be able to keep it private. No, the wealthy and the powerful will maintain their privacy. They won't have any issue buying the secrecy that they want. It will just be the average citizen who gets screwed over in this deal when we become an entirely cashless society. The wealthy will have all the things that they all ever wanted, because that's what the political class is always appeasing and doling out favors for. Everybody wants the wealth, so everybody is greedy. It doesn't matter where you are. People will act in their own self-interest. And to think that one institution is angelic and always there to help people, and that they should be given power, is naive and not an equitable understanding of what people are. Like, people are the same everywhere. Power, there's a reason that statement or that mantra is incredibly powerful and absolutely 100% true. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. When did we forget that? When did we forget that? In the cashless society, a society without electronic cash, where every transaction is intermediated, is one with incredibly inequitable power. And cash is exactly the kind of technology that evens the playing field again, particularly when you're talking about digital cash, when you're talking about money, and one where even better the consensus, the rules, the monetary policy of the system is even part of the individual's choice. It's an incredibly, incredibly powerful technology, and it should be fostered. The cost of it will absolutely be dwarfed. They will be non-existent in comparison to the incredible benefit of adopting a technology like this worldwide. So that's the argument here, and I thought this was a wonderful piece. Just a giant round of applause for Jerry Brito for putting this together so that we can listen to this. And I think I'm probably going to I'll probably release tomorrow before the actual episode that we do the full read of this. I've been trying to not do all of this. I'm not getting much compensation for these things, and they take an enormous amount of time. So I've been a little reluctant to release like full like audiobook reads from these without like a little bit of a fee. I think I'm still going to do that because it's more important to me that this is available to people to just listen. But I'm probably going to still put like an ad in it, so that at least I'm making, you know, a little bit of change whenever a lot of people go and listen to it. So that will make it a little bit easier on me for the amount of work that I've put into these things. And I will probably be dropping the full edited, no intro or outro version, except for, you know, just the typical like title and I'm Guy Swan and all that blah blah. So that will be available on just in the podcast feed, and then as a long read on the website, so you can check that out at cryptoeconomy.life. And I assume I'm going to send it to Coin Center and just let them know. So I assume Neeraj and or Jerry or whoever, they're free to host it on their site as well. And I just a thank you to them for putting this together, because I thought this was a wonderful discussion and another really, really fun one to hit on the show. And I hope you guys learned as much as I did. All right. So with that, I guess we're going to close this one here. Closing out the case for electronic cash with three parts. And if you want to download the full thing and share it out with people, that will be available tomorrow. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Do not forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and check out cryptoeconomy.life, where you can find this and hundreds of other works, articles, essays, reports, and anything that you could think of to explore and dive into topics around Bitcoin and the crypto economy. That's where you find it. cryptoeconomy.life, and digging in the 260-odd episodes in this podcast history. So I hope you will stick with me and keep exploring this space. The best thing you can do to help support this show is share it. Share it with somebody you know in the Bitcoin space who wants to dig into this and have all of this stuff available in audio. And until then, I thank you. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.